Loud. Magnified with Matt Cooper. Proudly sponsored by Close Brothers Motor Finance. Recognised on Trustpilot as best in class in Ireland. With fast, fair finance decisions. Made in minutes, sometimes seconds. Motor dealerships and brokers. Looking to become a partner? Get in touch at closemotorfinance.ie.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.
Welcome to this new series of Magnified, and this one has been brought to you by Close Brothers Motor Finance. Thank you to Close Brothers for getting involved. Recognised on Trustpilot as best in class for motor finance, customer service, speed of decisions and support in Ireland. If you're a motor dealership or a broker, look to join the network. Get in touch and speak to the team at closemotorfinance.ie. Now, for the first episode of Magnified, we're doing something a little bit different. And I got permission at an event I was at recently to record it and to use it for the podcast, because it was two of the greatest hurlers of the 21st century have produced their own books, their own autobiographies, which are great reads. But we did a launch night for them in Croke Park in front of about 350 people. Small crowd by their normal standards in Croke Park, but an attentive audience that loved hearing their stories from their careers and a little bit about why they had written these books. So the two of them are Galway's Joe Canning, the great forward, won the All-Ireland finally in the mid-2000s and 10s, which he had been striving for so long. Richie Hogan, who has won almost countless numbers of All-Irelands with Kilkenny. I got a chance to speak to them on stage in front of the audience, and why don't you have a listen?
Ladies and gentlemen, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Would you please welcome to the stage Joe Canning, Richie Hogan. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Matt Cooper from The Last Word on Today FM. I'm also a Cork man, so I don't know why I've been asked to interview a Kilkenny man and a Galway man. Did I hear someone boo there? I heard one person brave enough to actually do that. It is a great delight to be here this evening to have the opportunity to talk to the lads about two absolutely fantastic books. I don't know how many of you have had the opportunity yet to read them. They are terrific. They are really, really insightful into two wonderful hurling careers, and we'll have the opportunity to talk to the two lads a little bit about that now. And if you haven't got the books, go get them now and the lads will sign them, although I think you've signed most of them at this stage in the room. The first thing I want to start on, Joe, I'm going to start with you. Michael Murphy has announced he's coming out of retirement for Donegal, so when are you coming out of retirement?
Yeah, next year, we'll see. Yeah, I think the rules probably suit the footballers to come back out of retirement than the hurlers. If they changed a bit of the rules for us, maybe I might come back. But you don't have as much running to do. But
in the last couple of years, since you retired, and it's 3 years now, have you at any stage thought, I could still do that? I know there was a lot of push on you when Henry Shefflin went into Galway, but did it sort of strike you, geez, maybe I went that bit too early?
There's always that kind of... I suppose self-egotistical thing in your own head that you'd still love to and think you can, but when you're realistic about it, I was finding I was just like I never had the best pace anyway, as a lot of people know, but I was just lacking that little bit of a like first couple of yards that was going on me.
Did you need it?
Oh, you did. Yeah, you need it in these days. Like, some people say, yeah, you have the head and stuff like that, but when you're in the thick of the action and you're just going for that ball and it's a 50-50, if you're not there, it's like you get found out very quickly. Do you know, if you're going up against whoever it is, David Blanchfield or any of these lads or Dermot Burns or, do you know, whoever it is, if you're not at the top of your game, especially when you get older and you're picking up injuries a little bit easier, I just felt that I didn't probably want, let's say, Henry or Micheál Donoghue or whoever it was, or Shane O'Neill to go, Joe, I think you should think about maybe retiring and giving me the option. I never wanted that. I always wanted to go out on my own terms. So, yes, in some ways, maybe I did go out too early. And in other ways, I probably I was out the right time.
Richie, what about you? When are you announcing your comeback?
I think everybody knows that that won't be happening anyway. I was nearly like Joe Biden when I was finishing. I was the opposite of Joe. I was the opposite of Joe Canning here. I wouldn't be able. I'd love to go back, you know, but I just wouldn't be able. I gave whatever I had and a little bit more, and I'm pretty content actually. Completely different to Joe's perspective of wanting to go out on top, and I completely understand that. I didn't want to get to Michael Murphy's stage and be 35 and think, Jesus, do you know what, maybe I could actually do it again. So I didn't just want to waste a single drop. So that's, yeah, I'm definitely finished. You know, I won't be getting any phone calls for sure.
Well, what comes across in both of the books though as well is that you took enormous physical punishment for your careers. I mean, you particularly, Richie, I mean, you kept going with this extraordinarily bad back over how many years? 6-7 years, really, of bad back.
Yeah, well, look, Matt, if you were carrying the lads I was carrying, you'd have a bad back, too. You're not recording yet, are you?
We are, actually, yeah.
This is live. Yeah.
That is absolutely not true, and I didn't mean it. That is for sure. To be honest with you, like, it's so important, and it becomes such a part of your identity. And I was definitely always of the realization that I knew there's a stopwatch, and once that goes, you're gone. So you can't change your mind when you're 40. And I said this to you, I think, on your own show. Like, I knew in the last year or two that the best I could hope for was to come on for 25 or 30 minutes, and I knew, and I was told that was my role. But I would never have felt that, even though I had played for 10 or 12 years and played a pivotal role, let's say, in really big days, I never felt that playing for 15 or 20 minutes was beneath me at all, and I was happy to do it. And to be honest, I trained and prepared way harder in those last 3 or 4 years than I did for the previous 12 or 13. But it was 100% worth it. And
it 100% worth it? Why was it not follow what Joe's example of go before you're told to go, or when you feel that you still can contribute at the level that you had established previously?
I don't know. I just didn't, like, for me it was always, and maybe this is just the environment that was in Kilkenny at the time as well. The individual is, it's just, I'm trying to think of a better word than beaten out of you, but it's not, and that's not how I mean it, but it's actually the individual ego is driven out of you, and it is all about the team, and the team is so important, and being part of it is so important. And I would have seen incredible contributions, which were vital, of people who were part of the panel, the likes of Tommy Walsh, Henry Shefflin did 2 years of it, Brian Hogan towards the end of his career, Martin Comfort towards the end of his career. And they were so pivotal and important at that time for everybody else that I felt it was just my time to do it. And I was dying to get on the pitch and play. And I still thought that if I could get things right, that I would play and that I would contribute. And being on the pitch was just worth every bit of it for me. It wasn't necessarily about winning Hurlers of the Year and winning All-Irelands. Just actually being on the pitch was better than not being on the pitch. That's the way I weighed it up.
What do you make of that, Joe?
It's a different perspective than I would have come from Galway, obviously. It's like, what have you, 7 All-Irelands?
Yep.
I've won, you know. So it's like apples and oranges in some way. It's just, I can see where he's coming from, but I personally wouldn't have been able to do that. And that's just the way it was with me. It was what a guy said to me, you can always get out too late, but you can never get out too early. Do you know that kind of way? Am I saying that right or whatever? But it was just
But sure, there are some people who maybe do get out too early, that they have more to give.
I still felt it was the right time for me. There was probably a year or two even before that I was even thinking about it.
And of course,
COVID for me, I didn't enjoy it.
Who did?
I know, but I didn't. I didn't enjoy the whole. I suppose I was after moving to Limerick as well, and I was kind of training on my own, and I wasn't really around the environment. So the different situations, different circumstances.
But Joe, you've always been your own man, because it comes across very much in the book as well, that initially, after a brilliant minor career and winning All-Irelands at minor and all the talk about you going straight into the senior team, you didn't. You took a year out, effectively, before you went into the senior team, despite Ger Lochlann and others trying to get you on board. I mean, that's a very unusual thing for an up-and-coming teenager to say, no thanks, I'm not ready yet.
In some ways it was, but even before Ger was ever announced, I said that I wasn't going in, but probably there was an approach in my last year of minor to go in, and I was probably nearly all for it in that split moment, and only Matty Murphy said, no, you can't go in because we have a minor quarterfinal to play. So in some circumstances, I probably listened to people around me as well. I had a good support structure in my family, and there was enough of them to probably tell me the right and wrong thing to do. But I didn't take a year out. I think Ger's famous enough. He told me I went on a world tour and I got as far as Limerick. Because I played under 21 with Galway that year, and we won the All-Ireland.
And then when you were winning All-Irelands at minor and at under 21 level, did you think it would be easier to win a senior one than it proved to be?
Oh, but that's the unrealistic bubble that we probably live in Galway for a long time. To be honest about it, when you're winning minors, you're winning under 21s. I grew up winning club All-Irelands with Portumna. You don't think it's going to be easy. It's far from easy, obviously. But you think in some subconscious way it might be the next step. And it's very frustrating then when you kind of go to, let's say, senior, and it just doesn't probably happen for a long time. And it doesn't help when you're coming up against one of the greatest teams of all time either, a lot of the time, and playing Kilkenny and the likes. So we didn't get past a quarter final until 2012, and we didn't even have to play the quarter final in 2012. Do you know? It was my first couple of years senior with Galway was play a couple of matches and enjoy the races. That was the reality of it, you know.
Of course, you also would have had some pretty strong characters as manager throughout the years with Galway, starting with Ger Lochlann, who you weren't afraid to come into conflict with, although it does seem that he tried to pick on you quite a bit, didn't he? Particularly through his columns in The Star, and despite the fact that he wanted you on the squad when you weren't willing, then suddenly, well, you're not good enough for it.
Yeah, it was a strange way of trying to get me in, I suppose, by telling me I'd never make it. But that's Ger, do you know what I mean? He had a column to write and stuff like that, and a lot of the stuff that he said about Galway is, when you actually think about it, it's probably true.
Hearing it at the time.
Yeah, you don't. When you're playing, you don't like hearing any negativity about you, no matter if it's true or not. As Richie will probably tell you, when you're in that bubble of a group, you take all that negative stuff, whether it's right or wrong, and you use it to try and get an edge, maybe. Ger would have said loads of stuff down through the years about me, and I would have used it as a positive in a lot of ways.
Richie, for you in Kilkenny, you would have won 7 All-Irelands, the majority of them, the earlier stage in your career. And you probably had an expectation that you were going to win the All-Ireland each year. What's it like when suddenly it's getting harder for the county and you haven't won an All-Ireland? I mean, how does that then impact on your enjoyment or your belief when you don't actually have that almost expectation that you're going to win?
Yeah, you... I suppose it gets very tense. In many ways, and just to frame what you're talking about, I won seven in the first nine years. Now, we got to finals after that. I think we got to four finals after that, and we were beaten in all four of them. But the expectation within the group doesn't leave. Now, what I would have noticed is I would have been the last cohort, myself and TJ and Paul Murphy and others, Colin Fenley, we would have been the last cohort or intake who would have had significant underage success. So we would have always had that expectation of winning, and winning was the standard, and not necessarily the goal. It was the actual winning was the standard, and if you didn't win, you've fallen below that standard, rather than having it as a goal to try and reach. And it certainly, the older cohort, that expectation never left us, and we ended up getting narky, to be honest with you. Like, that's what happens. You start pointing out mistakes, you start trying to improve constantly, you start trying to problem solve all of the things that maybe when we were winning, maybe we should have been doing them anyway, but you know, when you're winning, everything is okay. So yeah, it wasn't like, it was difficult, it was tense, but I mean, you have to be willing, we were always like this, you have to be willing to lose in order to win, or you have to put yourself up there knowing that, you know what, we're trying to win something here, it mightn't go our way, but that doesn't mean that you kind of shy away from it.
But Joe, that would suggest that particularly for Galway, you were coming from a different place in your expectation as a senior inter-county hurler.
Well, they like Kilkenny have the history, you know, they have the, it's bred into them, do you know what I mean? So coming from Galway, it's a completely different, we've five All-Irelands ever, you've what, 40?
I don't know, but
see,
they've lost count.
That's my point proven there now. So it's completely different. Like, I wasn't born when Galway won the All-Ireland before 2017. I was born in October, the All-Ireland was won in September 88. So I had heroes growing up, like Joe Cooney and all these guys playing with Galway, but Lee McCarthy never came to my school, whereas it came to Richie's school probably every year, like, or there or thereabouts, do you know? Sam Maguire was in my school more than Lee McCarthy. So yeah, I was completely, and all of us in Galway were completely coming from a different, we were just trying to break through and knocking that door, and hopefully eventually it'll open. And that was the reality of it. And it was almost more in hope than belief a lot of the time. You were just hoping you'd win.
Richie, given all the great players you played with Kilkenny, pick your favourite starting six forwards. Include yourself. Who were the other five forwards? And I know you'd have good friends here, but just quickly name the other five you'd have in your dream team with you.
I was a midfielder, Matt. But,
go on. You were a half forward to start.
I'll exclude myself. I don't know.
Go on, name them. Go on. Who are the people? Henry Shefflin has.
I don't like doing this because you always insult the wrong people.
That's why I'm asking.
So I'm going to leave out Henry Shefflin and TJ Reid straight away. Owen Larkin, Henry Shefflin, Richie Power, TJ Reid, Martin Comfort, Eddie Brennan.
There you go.
I'll train a few more.
What I want you to do now is, Joe Canning is transferred from Galway to Kilkenny. Drop one of those six to make way for him.
Have you ever played centre back, Joe?
Yeah.
Because
I go midfield.
You would have had to learn. that's the way it was.
Yeah.
But it just goes to show, Matt, that's the difference in the environment. Like myself and Joe are the same age, played most games against each other growing up. Joe would have had the hopes and dreams of Galway people you know, on his back, which is a huge amount of pressure. When I came in, like, nobody, and I was good at underage, but like in reality, it's a different sort of pressure because nobody cared in Kilkenny whether I made it or not. They were probably going to be in some way successful, or someone, even if they weren't as good, was going to stand in. So we have loads of guys in there, and it's you know, making the team in many ways is harder than winning All Ireland.
This holiday, wrap affection with a gift that everyone loves, gift cards. Giftcards.com makes it easy to make the thought and the gift count with over 350 brands to choose from. Gift from top brands like Sephora, Nordstrom, DoorDash, and more. New this year is the Giftcards.com gift card, which gives your giftee access to choose from almost anything at Giftcards.com. With no purchase fees, no expiration, and instant delivery, it's the gift of so many possibilities. Visit giftcards.com today. See giftcards.com for terms and conditions.
Does both of you have the similarities in the book, though, in certain things? And you mentioned the word narky earlier, because you both sort of refer to yourselves as being narky in the build-up to big games or in training sessions or whatever. And Joe, I know your book is out at the same time, for example, as Johnny Sexton in the rugby, and there's similarities between the two of you in the standards that you demand in training. I mean, you write it up almost like that you were almost a nightmare for everybody, that you were given out to them all the time.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't have been the nicest. I wouldn't have been at it the whole time. I definitely wouldn't have been every training or every drill or anything like that, but when I felt things needed to be said, I would have said it. And then at other stages, I would have been asked to actually, like when Michal came in, he actually pulled me aside and said, I need you to be more vocal. So there was, and that's probably when I got more vocal, actually, when Michal came in. Before that, I was kind of, I wasn't as vocal, but then when you get more senior, and like I was vice captain and Davy Burke was captain, and you kind of had to, when Michal Donoghue came in, he kind of wanted the players to take over and run the show rather than looking to the sideline to him for answers the whole time. So definitely from, let's say, 2016 on, it wouldn't have been, no, I never fell out with anybody or anything like that. That wasn't the thing. I'm still good friends with all the lads, but I would have expected standards, and I would have firmly believed if we weren't training as hard, like, I would have grown up hearing about the training Kilkenny were doing, and they were supposedly harder matches at training than they were when they used to play championship games. So like we were all trying to learn like them and trying to get to that level in training that it's obviously working for them, so we have to try and get the training.
Because what comes out as well is that, you know, by reputation, there was almost, in Kilkenny, games without referees in the training sessions. Anything almost went, and you had to prove yourself to grab. Because there's a story you tell in the book, Joe, of one of your Portumna clubmates, Eugene Mack, is it?
Yeah, yeah.
And you literally, well, tell us what you did to him on the pitch one night, in the
Mack,
training pitch.
He actually rang me today about his stag. I was on the phone to him for about a half an hour about a trip to Dingle for 2 minutes. But Eugene, if anybody knows him, he's a good character, but he'd be, we were training one day in Pierce Stadium, and he was just pulling and dragging out of me, and I would have marked him at club training, obviously, as well. So when I went in first at 15 years of age, I would have grown up training with him. But when we went to Galway then, let's say five or six years later, I kind of rounded him and he pulled me back and I just let back the hurl. And I didn't realise he was kind of falling behind me, and I just clocked him right in the jaw, and he went in the ground and I scored a goal, and everybody just stopped. Like everybody went, oh my God, he could be dead for all we know. But he got up again, he came in, he went, ah, good goal. And that was it. And he just continued on. But that was probably, Portumna were at a different stage than Galway were. So we would have been like, Portumna training was probably more intense with the likes of Dinny Cahill over us and stuff like that at that time, and Sean Tracy and Johnny Kelly, and around like 2008, 2009. So us Portumna lads, when we were training, we gave it as good as we got, you know, and we just got on with stuff.
Because, Richie, you have a similar story in your book, and I already asked you about this on The Last Word, but I think it's a good story about how you introduced yourself to Jackie Tyrrell.
Yeah, a little bit more graphic. Like, what I read Joe's... I read that part in Joe's book, and we have a phrase for that. It's called making a bit of room for yourself. That's what we call it in Kilkenny. But... And the training session wouldn't be stopped. You'd just have a roar from the sideline saying, get him off! And physios would be dragging lads off and a new man would be in. And that's the way ours was. Like, I suppose I spent a couple of years... I actually didn't know this until recently enough, where Tommy Welch told me after 25 years that when I came in initially, I came in with a... Now, I say a bit of a reputation, but that sounds negative, right? I just came in having played well at underage and would have been well known in Kilkenny, so they didn't want this guy to come in at 18 years of age and start roasting guys in training. So they lined up for me, essentially, Tommy and Noel Hickey and Jackie Tyrrell, and took turns baiting me up and down Nolan Park. I was very quiet when I came in first, would never have said anything, but I also would never have reacted to anything, because that's just the way that I had always played.
You just got on with it.
Yeah, that was it. And I would have enjoyed it even as such, because coming through that, coming in the dressing room afterwards, you think, geez, you know what, I'm so much better now. But there was a story which I have in the book, and every time I'm with the older cohort of Kilkenny people, we laugh about this, but we were down in Seafield Hotel in Wexford and we were training in Buffer's Alley, and whatever it was about Buffer's Alley during the summer, there wasn't a blade of grass on the pitch. There was flies everywhere and it was roasting hot, and they're supposed to, you know, at that time during training camps, if you go and you train in a club's pitch, they've told every man, woman, and child that you're coming, so the place is packed as well. So you've no, it's not like training camps nowadays. And Jackie was doing the usual thing, which was just, he hit me an awful belt where I'd caught the first ball, and you learn, you know how to protect yourself as a hurler as well. You know where the swing is coming from. The ball is there. You're trying to block a hurl or whatever, or you're trying to stand your ground. And I got struck on the jaw, on a side where I shouldn't have been struck on the jaw. And I just thought to myself, do you know what? That's it. And I just let him know I was there. And
how did you let him know you were there?
Well, the next ball was coming in, and just I let him jump up for it, and I'd say he thought all his Christmases have come together, was uncontested, and I just broke the hurl off his chest as hard as I could, and he came after me then, and I just hit him again, and we rolled around for a few minutes, and the game, this was no, like, nobody was batting an eyelid at this, really, that the game was continuing, and we continued that then for the rest of the game. But I went in, and we had ice baths. We use these mortar tubs for ice baths, and you go jump in kind of two at a time. And like, he was in the ice bath, and I could see it was nearly like this. It was nearly like this, like someone had burnt an iron across his chest, and he was there. And I jumped in beside him in the ice bath, and the two of us were trying to cool off, but quite literally. But there was more of my blood on him, and vice versa. But everybody was kind of half worried and kind of half laughing. But yeah, and I just went in then. I purposely sat beside him. And it was just a message that, look, because our trainings were, like they say, lawless, but they were scandalous, you know. And you just have to, if you don't stand up for yourself, if I hadn't have done that, like, I could have been gone in another year or two. You know, you just have to be able to protect yourself, you know.
Joe, does that suggest that that's one of the reasons why Kilkenny was so successful for that period? That would that type of doggedness have been present in other counties?
Probably not, no. Certainly, like, the biggest example I can give it of it is, do you remember Tommy Walsh got hit by Benny Dunn, I think, in an All-Ireland final, and he just got back up again. like another lad would have rolled around trying to get him sent off, but Tommy.
Oh, we all know those lads.
Yeah. Those weasels. Those weasels.
Actually, Richie, it is the thing. I mean, you wrote about being sent off in an All-Ireland final and the injustice of it, as you saw, particularly the referee not taking note of what had been told to him from the sideline, from 5 metres away from what had actually happened. Did you ever get an apology afterwards for that or anything like that, or an explanation?
No, I'll tell...
Off James Owens.
I haven't, no. But, you couldn't... I haven't put this piece in the book because... To be honest with you, I ran out of pages. But I was on the All-Star trip to Abu Dhabi that November. I was working for the GA and GPA here, and that would have been part of my job. And I was humming and hawing about whether I would go or not. And so I said, "Oh look, I better go." And I sat down on the plane and I was like, who is coming to sit beside me? And you could not write it. James Owens arrived in and sat beside me for a 6 or 7 hour flight. Now, somebody in the GAA booked those flights, right? And not a chance, because everyone else was lined up in alphabetical order. And I was like, O and H are not that close. And I was also sitting beside him then on the way home. And it was... It was, you know, those 4 seats in the middle, and I was in the middle, and I couldn't even move. So I just folded my arms and fell asleep. But I had been out the night before in Abu Dhabi, and I don't sleep well when I'm drinking. And when I don't sleep well, if I nod off, I kind of, not hallucinations, but I kind of get weird sort of dreams. So I fell asleep, and I don't know if you've ever had this sensation where you're awake, but you can't move. So you... So I fell asleep on the plane, and I was kind of half conscious of what was going on around me. But I had this dream where the air hostess came down with turkey and ham, and James was eating me turkey and ham, and I couldn't move. And I was wired to the seat, and I was ready to swing on him, and I was like, I can't move. And it couldn't have got much worse, really.
Is there a counsellor in the room who might actually offer their services?
So I'm not looking for an apology. Anyway, Matt, to be honest, what happened happened, and I'm well over it, as you can tell.
Okay, just a few questions to finish off. And again, I'd recommend the books are terrific reads. But I just asked about Joe. Can you think of what would be the 3 standout moments from your career? When you were putting together this book, you'd have gone back through all the matches, you'd have gone back through the achievements, the goals you scored. But what would be the 3 sort of things that you would just really remember the most, maybe be proudest of?
Probably our first Club All-Ireland in 06 against Newtown Shandrum here. That was up there. It's probably number 1, to be honest. Then obviously the All-Ireland 17, and then I actually think the Club All-Ireland again in 14, because we had 7 county finals in a row to 03 to 09, and then we didn't get there till 13 again, and like people thought in Galway we were kind of finished, and we were old enough. I think Ollie was playing, I think he was about 40, he was close to 40 years of age, and he was our captain. And we beat the Napiercig side from Limerick in the semi-final. That were the new up-and-coming team, so we weren't even supposed to be there. And then beat, actually, Mount Leinster Rangers from Carlow in the final. And it was kind of one of these things that we just got the last ounce out of that team. So they were probably the 3 biggest memories I have, yeah.
What about for you, Richie?
I don't know what my best memories are, but definitely moments that I remember the most. One in my early career, in 2009, we played in a league final against Tipperary, and I was only 20, but I felt like I'd been on the panel for ages, and I felt like every game was my last chance, and I could be heading for the exit door. Henry Shefflin was sent off at some point in this midway through the second half, and I was put on the freeze and just played really well, and it went to extra time, and it was an incredible game. And I remember just coming off the pitch that day thinking, thank God something has gone well, because I had only been kind of hurling in fits and starts up to that point. And that was a really important moment for me, and I got so much confidence out of that. And halfway through my career, I wouldn't say it's a moment in general, but the year in 2014 that I played, just everything came together. I played every game, almost every game that year, which was unusual for me with the injuries that I had. And hurling just seemed so easy as well in terms of the way we were playing. And we won every single trophy, and we won them after incredible battles. We won the league final after extra time, and we won the All-Ireland final as part of a replay. And that was just the height of enjoyment, and you felt at the peak of your powers. And then towards the end of my career, in 2022, when we were beaten by Limerick in the All-Ireland final, I had gone through two horrendous years of injury and not featuring, and I was heading for the exit door in my own head. And I came on for a couple of minutes against, I came on for about 15 minutes against Limerick. And the first ball that came, I got it and stuck it over the bar. And I remember just running back in and just thinking, like, it was so good having been away for so long. Just, even though we were beaten, but at the time I think we were level. Just to be back and playing meant a huge amount.
The last couple of questions, I'm going to start with you, Richie, to let Joe consider his answers. Best player, Richie, that you ever played against, and who is the player you least liked playing against?
Best player I played against?
Yeah.
Oh, the best player I played against is Joe, for sure.
I don't need to think about it.
I'm genuinely not saying that just because he's on stage, but I read in part of, and you'll see it from the way he speaks here, but I read in part of his book where he speaks about The Last Dance, you know, the Michael Jordan film, and he gives a paragraph, brilliant paragraph, and then he ruins it all in the next paragraph by saying, I'm not comparing myself to Michael Jordan. So he's always apologizing for how good he is, which I don't think he should do, and he was absolutely every bit as good as a Michael Jordan or better.
Who did you like playing against the least?
Team.
Or player, individual.
Genuinely, I never had any issues with any players. Would you believe, I cannot remember a moment in my whole career where a player said anything to me. And we talk about sledging and things like that. I cannot remember anybody saying anything.
Okay, was there anyone who was just incredibly difficult to get the back?
Noel Connors from Waterford was incredibly... The one hurler in the country who was smaller than I was. And I couldn't... all of the advantages I had of, like, speed and quickness off the mark and, you know, that sort of stuff, he had them as well. I found him incredibly difficult.
Joe, who was the best player you ever played against?
I have to say Richie now.
You were going to say that anyway.
I was going to say it anyway. To be straight, like, you could pick any Kilkenny hurler, really, Henry or any of the lads. Probably the two fall into one, the two questions with JJ. I just always found him really difficult to mark. Like, he never opened his mouth or anything, or never hit you a dirty belt, but, like, he was just, you thought you'd better of him, and he just come out and, like, he just win the ball back off you or whatever. And no, I didn't have, like, I probably had the most respect for him as well, you know, because of how he played. There was other guys that I actually enjoyed marking them in a weird way, because it challenged me to try and perform against what I thought was the best defender ever. So he was class, and he's a lovely fella as well, which is always, but like, you could pick any of them, because when we were playing or growing up, it was Kilkenny was who you were looking at, like, you know. And when we started off, obviously, and they had their, you had your like serious period of time there, going for the five in a row and everything like that. We would always try to be like, we were never like them, but we always like, they were who we were aiming to be, you know. So yeah, JJ was kind of both for me.
Just to finish off the both of you, did you enjoy doing the book, Richie? Did you enjoy looking back over your career?
Yeah, so I found it uncomfortable sometimes, but in general, I'm really happy I did it. Does that answer the question?
Yeah.
I'm really happy I did it. The process of doing it was tough going, but I'm really happy I did it. Funnily enough, if a player at the age of 25 not write a book, but had to go through the same sort of reflection on all of the things that he'd gone through, I think he'd be a way better player at the age of 26, interestingly, because you just get a much better perspective in terms of what was important and what wasn't.
What about for you, Joel? Did you enjoy it?
I did, actually, yeah. Well, like, I wouldn't have done it. There's very few people I would have done it with. So Vincent Hogan, to get to do it with him, because he's retired, basically. So to do the book with him was like, that made me at ease, because I always would have enjoyed talking to him. I always would have enjoyed his articles. He had a different perspective than most GAA journalists. He was never looking for the big heading. So once he said yes, I was very content. But it did take me a little bit at the start, because it's very awkward talking about yourself. It's much easier to talk about other people. But when you're going back through, and I'm sure you found it, when you're going back through your career and you're kind of going, like, stuff you kind of won, you're like a little bit, Jesus, what will people think if they, yeah, you won this, you won that, and people would be like, Jesus, it's all about himself. But it is all, obviously, when you're writing a book. So I found that kind of hard to get over at the start, but Vincent was really good. And yeah, he made it very enjoyable for me, yeah.
Well, they're two excellent books. You've been really frank and honest in the books and in the answers you've given this evening. Ladies and gentlemen, Richie Hogan and Joe Callan. And so that was our somewhat different first edition of the new series of Magnify. Just to remind you the names of the books, Joe Canning's is just simply My Story, and Richie Hogan's is Whatever It Takes. And my thanks to the commercial department at Croke Park for allowing me to record the event and to bring it to you as a Magnified podcast, and also to Richie and Joe for agreeing to it as well. I think you'd agree that they were good fun to listen to on the night and during this podcast today. So that's it for today. Thanks again to everybody involved in the podcast, and of course to our series partner, Close Brothers Motor Finance, your best-in-class motor finance customer service based on trust, customer service and technology, with the portal Close Connect, designed to make life easier for partners and brokers. So if you're a motorship, dealership or a broker looking to join the network, get in touch and speak to the team at closemotorfinance.ie. So until the next time, thank you for joining us on Magnified with Matt Cooper.
Magnified with Matt Cooper, proudly sponsored by Close Brothers Motor Finance. With Close Connect, our technology means we can say yes more often. Approve finance applications in minutes and sometimes seconds. Partner with Close Brothers Motor Finance at closemotorfinance.ie.
Go loud. Sounds better with us.